All right, continuing the theme of pain, we go all the way back to National Student Conclave in 2015. One of our very first episodes with a guy by the name of Corey Zimney. Great episode on pain. Does hurt equal harm? This one recorded live over beers in Omaha, Nebraska. As we continue talking pain this month, Throwback Thursday with PT Pinecast.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? This is the PT Pinecast. A podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pinecast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, here we go. Next episode of the PT Pinecast, Corey Zimney, PT DPT Assistant Professor at the University of South Dakota School of Health Sciences Physical Therapy Department. Received his Master of PT from the University of North Dakota in 94. Completed a post-professional DPT from Des Moines University in 2010. Currently enrolled in a PhD PT program at Nova Southeastern University. He's part of the Center for Brain and Behavioral Research at the University of South Dakota and the Therapeutic Neuroscience Research Group, conducting research specifically in the areas of pain neuroscience, education, and therapeutic alliance. Also provides teaching instruction with the International Spine and Pain Institute in partnership with Evidence in Motion. Corey, welcome to the PT Pinecast, man.
Hey, thanks, Jimmy. Glad to be here.
First question is always the hardest one. What are we drinking tonight?
So I have the local red.
Okay.
So it's actually pretty tasty.
Here at the local beer patio and kitchen, National Student Conclave, you presented today, going to do it again tomorrow. It's got to be a cool feeling.
Yeah, it was. It was a great great atmosphere. The students are great. I really appreciate just seeing how many showed up. I was a little nervous. I was on the far end of the hallway, so I thought, are they going to travel all this distance? But then I remembered they're PTs. They like to exercise, so.
Stretch the legs. So you gave me a little bit of National Student Conclave history. Last night, we ran into each other in the hotel bar. Two guys who just wanted to have a drink before the conference, I guess.
Why not?
And you were at the very first National Student Conclave.
I was, and I didn't even, you know, the sad part is back then I didn't recognize it was the very first Student Conclave. I just remember they said, hey, we're having the Student Conclave thing. And
come on out.
So my senior year, we road tripped down to Louisville, Kentucky, and enjoyed a few of the local brews that down there and enjoyed the content. But yeah, I was checking out, and they said, yeah, the first Student Conclave was in 1993 in Kentucky, and I went, I was there.
You were there. Part of history. That's got to be really cool to go full circle. I mean, that's that's awesome. Be a student there and then come back, and you're on the bill, man.
Up at the podium, yeah.
Yeah. So how'd that feel being in front of a bunch of students? I mean, obviously you're a professor now, so you kind of get that vibe anyway, but it's got to be cool when you see a bunch of really, really motivated students willing to drive or fly from far away just to come absorb something from this field.
Right. Well, and the beauty of what we know about conferences like that is when we look at that room and see those students, you know who the leaders of this profession are going to be in the future? It's every one of those students, because if they have an interest and a drive now,
what are they
20 years from now, they will be the leaders of our profession. And we know that. You know, so if you want to be great in this profession, just start going to meetings, because you'll start connecting, you'll get that internal drive, and you will be a great therapist.
You're literally walking proof of that, being at the first National Student Conclave,
exactly.
And you're back presenting.
Yep.
So what are we presenting on? Because you're saying that something isn't real, but I feel like I felt it.
Right.
So what's your presentation? Describe it a little bit.
So I talked about basically when pain is not a thing. And for years, I mean, I'm a traditional old-base manual therapy type of therapist, and it was always looked at, you know, as pain is the, you know, it's a slip disc. It's the joint that's out of place. It's your fascia stuck. And so we always grasp for this thing to fix. You know, it was kind of the find it, fix it problem. You know, what's wrong with you? And I can fix it and you'll be better. Unfortunately, through years of practice, I found out I couldn't find and fix everything. And every time I found something, it didn't necessarily fix it. And obviously, I was fortunate enough to meet Adrian Lowe about 8 years ago. And I found out that there's a thing called a brain and a nervous system. And I realized maybe there's a little more to life than just muscles and joints and fascia. That maybe there's a brain. And not only just a brain, an immune system and a cardiovascular system. The endocrine system and how
they all talk to each other.
Right, and they all talk and communicate and really the pain experience that a person goes through, what that really is all about. So that was really kind of what I just wanted to talk about, because I think too often we think of pain as a thing, as something that we can and fix. And really, the International Association study for pain tells us pain is an experience.
Okay.
And it's understanding that when you're talking about pain, you have to understand the patient experience. And that's what the biopsychosocial model really brings us to, is really looking at not only just the biological, because tissues do get injured. There's no doubt about that. And I think sometimes that gets lost in our message. You know, they're like, oh, you just think it's all in the head. And it's right. Like, no, there's real tissues. They get injured. But the thing about the human body is tissues heal. And there's really not a lot we have to do to make tissues heal. It's a normal biological process. When you were a kid and fell off your bike,
a week later, that bruise is going to go away.
It goes away. And you didn't have to think about it. You didn't have to do anything about it.
Right.
You know, and I get it. I'm not saying that, you know, you need to load the tissues appropriately. You need to get good nutrition, good sleep. You know, all these things help that healing process, but it's going to heal itself for the most part. Yeah, I get it if it tears and stuff. Hopefully our skills are good enough to evaluate that it's a torn ACL or the rotator cuff's torn. But the weird part even about that, if it tears or ruptures, a lot of people can live just fine even with that. It's the amazing adaptability of the human body. And I mean, I used to, coming out of PT school, it was all about the problem list. What's wrong with the patient?
Right.
You know, you know, if I can get 30 things that's a problem list, I must have done something right. And recognizing now, maybe it's more about what the patient can do list and not so much this problem list, you know. And recognizing all these things we talk about, oh, they have this wrong with them. Well, that's true in many cases, but we have to start questioning what's abnormal and what's normal.
Right. You know? And what's normal, abnormal for that particular patient.
Exactly. You know, because, I mean, obviously there's a huge variation in our population. You know, yeah. I mean, in all the imaging studies now, I mean, half the people walking around the street with no back pain have a herniated disc.
Right.
So is a herniated disc that big a deal?
I'm going to give props to a professor that I'm not in a class with, so it can't be considered butt kiss to try to get some points. My ortho professor, Marwan Kablawi from Marymount University, say all the time, why are you looking for an MRI? Exactly what you just said. Half the population is going to have a disc and be asymptomatic, or not have a disc and have pain.
Yep.
So if it's not a thing and it's an experience, and you brought up Adrian Lowe, and one of our first six episodes was with Karen Litzy,
yep.
And she has a big old man crush on Adrian Lowe. She believe me, she emailed me books. You need to check out this book. And her talk with us was great. She talked a lot about the pain and what the experience does, and she talked about if the patient can understand what's going on, we can actually see an effect in the experience of pain.
Yep.
What do PT students need to know about pain if we're stuck in this model of it is a thing? Because before I read this, I was like, I don't understand what he's saying. What, pain's not a thing. I thought it was a thing.
And really, it comes down to that. And that's why we talk about explaining pain to patients and really this, what we call pain neuroscience education. Because when they can understand what's happening to them, they have this ability then to, are you fearful when you know what's going to happen? And if you understand something, how's your fear and anxiety levels? And when your fear and anxiety levels get less, guess what you experience less of?
Less of that thing that's not a thing.
Exactly.
That just goes back to what you were saying a minute ago, is all these systems talk to each other. So when we are preparing for something we think or perceive is going to be painful, we tighten up, and a lot of different systems. Heart rate goes up.
Yep.
A lot of things get cranked up. So how do we put this into practice in PT? Where do I take
this? A lot of this, I'm going to relate back to Louis Gifford. You know, he was just way ahead of his time. Some people may have heard of him. If you haven't, look him up. He unfortunately passed away a little over a year ago. He was just a physio out of the UK that was just years, decades ahead of the rest of us as far as how he recognized this. He wasn't a researcher. He just treated patients. And through that process, he had the ability to read research and understand research and how it related to my patient on Monday. And I think that's a hard thing for a lot of us to do, because it's like, oh, the research's great, and then the big question is, so what?
So what? What do I do with it?
What do I do with it? And so he had this ability to take that and understand, and then to use that to start explaining it to patients, but to put it in language that they can understand. And we talk about the use of metaphors and stories, but put it in a relationship that the patient can understand. Laura Mosley has shown us, you know, with his research, that when you do this, patients get it. A lot of us neuroscience were like, neuroscience, I barely could pass that class.
Yeah.
I can't understand it, and I thought it was pretty smart. How's the patient going to get it?
Right.
But on the basic level, when we explain it in these metaphors and stories, they get it. And when they understand it and they get it, like you said, we see fear and anxiety. We can use those wonderful magic words that we have in therapy. You're going to be okay.
Yeah. So give me an example of how you would explain, how would you explain it? You say, like, you know, stories and metaphors. Let's say I have, let's just go with something that you're going to see a lot. Low back pain. I got low back pain. Right. How do you explain that to someone to make me start on the path to actually feeling better?
True. You know, I mean, I work in the acute setting still. So once a week, I still do a little clinic work, a lot of acute back pain. You know, a lot of times originally, obviously the research behind this was with the chronic pain. And we like people to get to recognize it's not just chronic pain. Pain is pain in many ways. You know, we understand there's a difference as a change changes over time. But even in my acute patient, when they come in and they're fearful because they hurt their back, because they maybe lifted, they're a CNA and they lifted a patient, or they work on the factory line and they lifted a box, and they have this fear because their back hurts. And we, like you said, they have back pain, and what's that mean? I'm going to be disabled, I'll never work again, right. You know, why not shoot me now?
And now there's a cascade going on of, oh, woe is me. And
right, so they have all these fears. So if I can just get a chance to explain to them that, think about back when you were a kid and you did fall off that bike. The next day when your pant leg rubbed on your knee, did it hurt?
Yeah.
Did you injure it anymore?
No.
There you go.
Okay.
And so a lot of times it's just simple things like that. Because their back hurts, we equate, as Descartes told us, pain is injury. So if my back hurts again, I must be injuring it more. And getting them to recognize that pain doesn't always mean injury. And that's probably the biggest shift we often talk about, is to get them to realize, obviously, pain and injury go hand in hand many times. And they're similar and they're equated, and they should be. You know, if I'm walking down the street and I roll my ankle, I hope it tells me that I rolled my ankle. But in the same sense, if I'm walking across the street and I roll my ankle and I happen to see a bus, I hope my brain says, don't worry about that right now, and get across the street.
Get across the street. That's good. That's a good example. It's a good metaphor. People can kind of picture that. Just going on some stuff that I read that you had put out there, and going on my talk that we had with Karen Litzy, it's educating that pain is a response to let you know that something could be becoming damaged, but not that something is becoming damaged.
Right. Yeah. Pain is based on the brain's perception.
And it's an experience.
And it's an experience. It's the brain's best guess, and it is that. It is a guess. It has to guess what I think might potentially be threatening or dangerous to me. And so anything that potentially could be dangerous, I should use pain to protect myself. Pain is the ultimate protector.
Right.
It's meant to do that. So if I sprain my ankle, it tells me, you know, running a marathon tomorrow is probably not the best thing I should do. And that's really what pain is for. It's meant to protect us. Unfortunately, culturally, and because of fears and multiple stressors that we live with today, I think many times our pain system becomes a little more hyperactive, a little more sensitive, because everybody tells us what's wrong with us, and we image something that may or may not necessarily be significant. And so we have so many more fears and anxieties, and I think a lot of it potentially has to do with the culture that we live in, and we kind of expect this immediate response because we want immediate gratification.
Now. I want it now.
Right. And so I want my pain to go away now, and that's great. But the reality is we often don't think about this. And Steve Schmidt opened up our summer clinical conference this year when he talked about his talk. And his very first question is pain a gift?
Well, yeah, it's a message to prevent injury, right? It should be. But
exactly.
But we look at it as, I don't want that.
Right, because it's unpleasant, and I get that. It's very unpleasant. But the reality is we know there's actually people that live in this world that don't experience pain. They have a genetic disorder, they don't feel pain. They don't live very long.
Ooh, that's a good point.
You put your hand on a hot stove, you don't know about it.
Right.
Until you start smelling flesh that's burning, and you go, what's that bad smell? And you recognize it's you. You break a bone, you walk on a broken leg.
Right.
So pain is actually, in many ways, should be seen as a gift. It's there to protect us. Unfortunately, our brain doesn't always get everything right all the time, or it holds on to that protective response a little too long.
Ultimately, the brain wants to protect us. It's the goal, make us live as long as possible.
Exactly. Your brain's job is to decide what's dangerous so I can try to get through to tomorrow.
Yeah. You talked about our culture, especially in America, our need for I want it now, I want it now. Just seeing a lot of things going around about physical therapy and getting PT first in terms of decreasing opioid use, because if I have pain, I might be thinking physical therapy because I want it now. I want it gone now. So I'm going to go to that pill because that will do it. That'll stop that message.
And the funny thing, we talk about going to that pill, and I have a great story. I get an opportunity to talk to the residents because we have a medical school attached with us. So there's a residency program, and so they have me come up and talk to them over the noon hour. And one of the residents shared a great story because I went through my spiel and kind of did my little talk and stuff. And he goes, well, I have to share. And he said, everything you're saying is absolutely true. He had a patient that he had to put through a detox for other reasons. So he had to take him off all of his pain meds. And they're like, you know, well, we have to get you off all this pain meds because we got to detox you.
Right.
Guess what his pain did after he detoxed?
Gone.
Wow. And we know that now, that actually it's called the opioid hyperalgesia, that by using opioids, especially over a long period of time, you can actually increase the sensitivity of the nervous system, which will make you more sensitive. So again, it's not like you can just stop cold turkey. I'm not telling people to do that.
Right, right.
But again, I think going through a proper drop in some of that medication, when you understand the simple message is hurt doesn't always mean harm.
Right.
Sore but safe. These are mantras that we use with patients to understand that I hurt. You know, so I educate patients, like we just said, when you fell down on your bike, injure your knee. We go out and do exercise and like, oh, that hurts. And I always say, remember, hurt doesn't mean harm.
Right.
Sore but safe.
I like that. I thought that should be like on a motivational poster in PT clinics. Hurt doesn't mean harm. I like that. So how do I put this into practice? I'm going to be a new grad PT in less than a year. And of course, when you're in front of a patient, for my first couple patients at any clinical rotation, I'm deer in headlights, and I'm just looking for something. I'm looking for pain because I want to, once I find it, I say I can treat it.
Right.
When do I bring this in? At what point in the treatment?
For me, it's day one, and like I said, and I think obviously, just like any clinical skill, recognize explaining pain to patients. It's a clinical skill, just like any other clinical
skill. Communication skill.
Right. It's a communication skill. And the hard part about it as a communication skill, when you learn a new mobilization or manipulation technique, it's kind of fun to practice on your...
Yeah, all the time.
You know, you're bringing all your friends in, you know, your classmates in, and hey, I got to show you this. Click, 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 pop, pop, you know, and you practice it over and over, and eventually you get pretty good at it. It's a little more weird to say, hey, come in here, I want to explain pain to you. And so our communication, and I'll be honest, when I heard Adrian talk, and I'm like, this is going to revolution my life. And on Monday morning, I talked to my first patient. I'm like, well, that really sucked.
Yeah.
You know, and it was horrible. It was uncomfortable for me. You could tell it was uncomfortable for the patient. Fortunately for me, in my clinic setting, because it was an occupational medicine clinic, so it was a lot of acute injuries, pretty rapid turnover. And so probably, you know, maybe 10 patients a week. Well, after the first year of doing it over 50 weeks, 10 times a week, that's 500 times, I got a little bit better.
Right.
And then after the second year, now I got 1,000 of them under my belt, and I was a little bit better.
Right.
And that's, I think, the thing is, it's a hard thing, just like any clinical skill. Plus, it's hard to practice.
Can you kind of size up? I mean, I've done one rotation in outpatient ortho, and some patients just wanted me to tell them what to do. And some patients liked when I brought over the anatomical model of the shoulder and said, so here's what I'm seeing. Here's why.
Right.
Can you kind of size up whether someone's like, just tell me what to do or I want to hear about this?
Right. And again, a lot of times my simple question is after I evaluate them. So I go through, do my full clinical exam and evaluate them and everything. And a lot of times my first simple question is, so do you know what's wrong with you? Has anybody ever told you why you hurt? And usually you're going to get met with one of two things. One is silence. The other is going to be some explanation that's so far off base that's not even close. Most of our patients have no clue why they still hurt. And so that's where we talked about the experience and listening to their story, listen to why all these strange symptoms that you can recognize probably don't make sense to them. You know, why does my pain started in one spot and it spread from one side to the other? And you, when you simply start talking about how the nervous system communicates.
It goes all over.
So, you know, when you hit your funny bone, where does it hurt?
Down the arm.
It's not where you hit it, does
right,
it?
Yeah.
Because it's a nerve. You have 45 miles worth of nerve spread all throughout your body. So you start trying to connect these dots for them to make them understand that it's more than just an injured tissue. And even if it is an injured tissue, think of every cut, bruise, and scrape you've had your whole life. You ever had one of those not heal?
Yeah, no.
So it's helping that patient recognize that, yeah, you injured tissues, and that's okay. Because guess what they're going to do? They're going to heal. So again, a lot of these just simple stories like I've been sharing with you now, it's just utilizing those in the patient encounter when you're talking to a patient.
And that's the examples that you kind of give, and that makes me a little better. I was just going back to something you just said, how people, they'll grab onto what their injury is. And I know I have friends who have this, and it's almost like the opposite of the ICF model. They grab onto, well, I'm plantar fasciitis. I'm a rotator cuff tear.
Yep.
It's like, well, no, you're a guy, and you might have that, but let's see if we can work on that. It's almost like they grab onto that pain, like, oh, I'm low back pain.
Right.
And that can't be good for this whole mechanism you're talking about. And then now I'm seeing, wow, a lot of people identify that way. I'm low back pain.
Yep. And I actually just tweeted this the other day because I've been hearing conversations, you know, is it a patient? Is it a customer? You know, it's all about the customer experience and all that. And I tweeted out, how about it's a person? How about it? His name is Joe, and he's married to a wife, and they have two kids, and he has hopes and dreams. And I understand the idea behind customer experience
sure.
and client and patient. I get all that. But I want us not to forget it's a person and to see them as a person.
And that's the center of the ICF model. We learn that in our first semester, first year at our program
right.
is you don't say low back patient. It's a patient with low back pain.
Right.
It's the other way around. But
yep.
I think we throw this around. I think between people, it kind of gets caught up with they want to explain what's wrong. I think almost because they just want someone to hear about it and they want people to understand it.
Right, and we need to validate it. You know, when somebody is injured, they're injured. When they have pain, they have pain. You know, and a lot of people say, oh, that's not real pain. The reality is I've had the opportunity to understand pain further. And I'll be honest, when I was out of PT school and treating patients and they'd come in, they're 12 out of 10. I'm like, oh my God, 12 out of 10, you faker. You know, and you give them the speech, you know, well, 7 out of 10 means you have to go to the emergency room. And they'd usually respond, well, I'm a 6.9 then, you know. But the reality is I've gotten better and listened to their story. And oftentimes, as I truly listen to what they're going through and the environment that they're in and everything that they're dealing with, that 12 out of 10 patient a lot of times now I go to myself, how are they not a 15 out of a 10? When I really listen to what they're going through and how they're having to cope and deal with everything and what they've been explained to and their background, I oftentimes wonder, how are you not a 15 out of 10? Because if I were to put myself in your shoes with what you probably know, I mean, yeah, I sit over here with 20 years of clinical practice and have had the opportunity to learn all of this great, amazing science. Our patients don't know any of that.
Yeah.
They don't understand any of that. They still live under Descartes' model from 1644 that pain and injury are the same thing.
Pain is injury.
Right.
Whew. So what are some things that students can read in terms of articles or books? I know Explain Pain, Karen Litzy had brought that one up, and I had taken a peek at that, and that, man, every time I learn something, either on this podcast or in school, I'm like, damn, I got 10 more things to learn again. I'm like, I should just stop learning.
Yeah, your reading list should never stop.
It doesn't.
I'll tell you, I have more articles to read than I'll ever be able to get through, but that's okay. Because obviously, as soon as you quit learning, you quit being a professional.
No more evolving, you're done.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, obviously, Lorimer and David's Explained Pain book is excellent. Adrian and Louie, their therapeutic neuroscience education, it goes through a lot of these metaphors and stories. But I really, Louie Gifford's books, Aches and Pain, it's a 3-volume set. It's massive. There's 1,000-some pages. The beauty of it, and it's truly that, it feels like you're sitting down at a pub in the UK with a pint with Louie Gifford, and he's just helping you understand this whole thing. And it's amazing the way he writes.
Isn't it unfair that, I'm gonna start some sort of campaign against this. British and Australian people, they automatically get 15 extra IQ points just as soon as we listen to them. Which, I mean, I'm not saying he's not worth it, right. But the average UK or Australian guy, he automatically gets 15 extra IQ points just because for some reason we think the accent means they're smarter.
Well,
I blame James Bond.
Well, and you got to recognize, so I get the opportunity to teach with Adrian. He's from South Africa, so yeah, he's got the great accent.
Another accent.
Right. And Louis Puntadura, Australia, so he's got a great accent. Yeah, and I'm probably one of those people, I probably have a face for radio, but I probably have a voice for silent movies, so I'm not sure where that fits in.
Well, let me reverse this. Does the North or South Dakota accent work well in South Africa, Australia, or the UK?
You know, I think that's why I need Adrian to take me down there, because maybe I got a chance to look smart.
I got a buddy who once told me that Australian chicks do actually dig American accents. If that's true, booking a flight. We have all of our episodes or pints, and before we're done with the pint, we have a shot. So what's a parting shot you would give to students or new clinicians to kind of wrap their head around how they can use this in their practice, either in clinicals or with their patients on Monday?
I think it's that. Recognize, are you going to be a master communicator with these patients? No. But can you start tomorrow by trying it? And pain is this amazingly complex thing. And the reality is every patient that walks through our door probably has some form of pain. I don't care if they're orthopedic, neuro, women's health, pediatric.
It wouldn't come. They just deal with it.
And so I think we all deserve, or the patient deserves us trying to understand this a little bit. David Butler talked about oftentimes that the patient, and I remember this when I was up in Duluth, Minnesota, when Adrian told us this, he said, you know, David Butler said the patient has to get it into the marrow of their bones when you're educating them. And I said to myself, if the patient has to understand it that well, how much better do I have to understand it? And don't get me wrong, we still need to load tissues. We still need to stretch and mobilize patients. We need to use all of those skills that we've learned. But I think we need to understand this pain experience and what's happening in that to even help our patients a little bit more.
That's good. So all that stuff I learned in neuroanatomy, I still need to understand that.
You're going to have to use it.
Okay, great. I just thought I had to pass the test and watch it go by.
I did, and then I had to relearn it 15 years later.
There we go. Well, it's good to also hear that, you know, your reading list never goes down and that, you know, you're going to be a lifelong learner, because we know that every time something new comes up, we're going to have to adapt to it. Now we know something new. Oh, I can help my patients better. Let me be able to do that. So that's also good to hear. Well, hey, I'm excited. Going to get to see your presentation tomorrow here at National Student Conclave. Just about done with my Hefeweizen. And it's been a great podcast. I want to thank Corey Zimney for coming on out. What's your Twitter handle again? So we can jump on there.
At ZimneyKJ.
Awesome. Fantastic PT podcast episode. Want to cheers to you. And thanks for very much for being on the show, man.
Thanks.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pintcast and online at ptpintcast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all. The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.